Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Tribal Court Convictions and the Sixth Amendment Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 13, 2016, the Supreme Court decided United States v. Bryant. Michael Bryant Jr. has multiple tribal court convictions for domestic assault. For most of those convictions, he was sentenced to terms of imprisonment, none of them exceeding 1 year's duration. He did not have the benefit of counsel with respect to these convictions, though they complied with the Indian Civil Rights Act. Having made further domestic assaults in 2011, Bryant was charged with violating 18 U.S.C. Section 117A, which makes it a federal crime for any person to commit a domestic assault within Indian country, if the person has at least two prior final convictions for domestic violence rendered in federal, state, or Indian tribal court proceedings. He argued that the Sixth Amendment precluded use of his prior uncounseled tribal court misdemeanor convictions to satisfy Section 117A's predicate offense element. Although the district court rejected Bryant's argument, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit agreed with him, vacating his conviction and directing dismissal of the indictment. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. Justice Ginsburg delivered the opinion for a unanimous court, which held that because Bryant's tribal court convictions occurred in proceedings that complied with ICRA, and were therefore valid when entered, use of those convictions as predicate offenses in a Section 117A prosecution does not violate the Constitution. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. To discuss the case, we have Tom Getty, who is principal at Morgan Lewis Consulting, LLC, and of counsel at Morgan Lewis & Bockius, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Getty.
On June 13, 2016, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit in the matter of United States against Bryant. A unanimous court remanded the case in which the defendant, Michael Bryant Jr., conditionally pled guilty to charges of domestic assault by a habitual offender in violation of Title 18 U.S.C. Section 117A. The repeat offender statute used here was enacted as part of the Violence Against Women Act, or VAWA, and allows prosecution of an offender who commits a domestic assault within Indian country and who has at least two prior final convictions for domestic violence from federal, state, or Indian tribal court proceedings. The 8-0 decision, authored by Justice Ginsburg, is a victory for advocates of the tougher legislative penalties for repeat offenders of domestic violence in Indian country, who heretofore have enjoyed relative impunity for committing record levels of sexual and domestic violence against Indian women. Some civil libertarians have expressed concern the decision allows for a weakened Sixth Amendment protection of the right to counsel. And Justice Thomas, in a concurring opinion, wonders aloud, again, whether the foundation of federal Indian law is sound, questioning under what constitutional authority Congress proceeds to regulate Indian affairs of this sort. In this case, Bryant, an enrolled member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe in Montana, had a record of over 100 convictions for domestic assault and at least five such convictions between 1997 and 2007, where he pleaded guilty in the Northern Cheyenne Tribal Court, and where in each case he was sentenced to less than 1 year in prison. Bryant was charged in federal court with two counts of domestic assault in violation of the VAWA repeat offender law, in which several of the prior tribal court convictions were used to satisfy Section 117A's predicate offense element. He was represented by counsel who argued the Sixth Amendment precluded use of the prior tribal court convictions because they were in proceedings in which he was not afforded appointed counsel. The district court denied Bryant's motion to dismiss the indictment, and Bryant entered a conditional guilty plea. The Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed the conviction, and while it acknowledged that the Sixth Amendment right to appointed counsel does not apply to tribal court proceedings, it found the use of those convictions would violate the Sixth Amendment in the instant proceeding, because the predicate convictions would have to have had a right to counsel guarantee at least coextensive with the Sixth Amendment right, relying on the High Court's 1994 decision in Nichols against the United States. In Nichols, an uncounseled misdemeanor conviction may be valid to enhance punishment in a subsequent conviction but only as long as no prison term was imposed in the prior conviction. The Supreme Court again unanimously made short shrift of the Ninth Circuit decision, holding that the uncounseled tribal court convictions were valid when entered, and they retain that status when used in a subsequent proceeding. Bryant's Sixth Amendment rights were honored in the current proceeding, and Bryant himself acknowledged that Nichols would have allowed reliance on uncounseled court convictions as predicate prior crimes when they resulted in only fines. While Bryant was imprisoned, but less than 1 year in each prior case, the court saw no reason to question the reliability of the tribal court convictions, and Bryant did not, quote, suffer anew, close quote, from any prior deprivation in the current federal prosecution. The decision recites the unique congressional statute that imposes on tribal governments various constraints that roughly match constitutional rights and limitations, the Indian Civil Rights Act, or ICRA. The right to appointed counsel does not appear in the ICRA, but Congress in the 2010 VAWA amendments included the requirement that whenever an enhanced tribal court sentence is imposed for various domestic offenses, this decision affirms a long-standing aspiration among tribal advocates for an enhanced prosecutorial authority against domestic violence in Indian country. The concomitant or corollary effect, however, is one that Justice Thomas alludes to, the increased role the federal government plays in the affairs of the tribes and their reservations. On the one hand, greater protection for Indian women and children is afforded. On the other, tribal sovereignty is layered with federal authority in Indian country. Some would argue that is fine. Increased public safety enhances the ability of the tribe to govern itself. Others argue it is paternalistic and intrusive. The congressionally created Federal Indian Law and Order Commission recommended lifting all such criminal authority from Indian country at the option of a tribe and allowing the tribe to exercise its own sovereign authority, including exercising its own criminal law authority consistent with the U.S. Constitution and empowered by a new separate Indian Court of Appeals. What Justice Thomas questions is the congressional plenary authority over tribes, but he also questions treating them all the same, as he notes each tribe is independently sovereign in different ways and differently exercised. His questions are not exactly suggestions for another scheme of things, but simply questions. However, everybody reads his questions differently, some seeing an ominous suggestion of assimilation or the demise of tribal sovereignty in them. Perhaps the most interesting question he raises is not the Indian law question, but whether the court's earlier decision in Burgett versus Texas should be reconsidered. Burgett essentially prohibits the government from using prior convictions obtained in violation of the right to counsel in subsequent proceedings to, quote, avoid eroding the principle, close quote, of the right to counsel. Justice Thomas notes the text of the Sixth Amendment only requires that the accused enjoy the assistance of counsel in that proceeding, meaning the current one. Here you can hear the impact of Justice Scalia's textualism doctrine, and if not already shared by Justice Thomas from the beginning, it is expressed here. Does this decision suggest that Justice Scalia's departure from the bench means that only Justice Thomas will embrace textualism of this sort going forward? We shall see as the court continues without him.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.